Blog Talk Radio.
I have returned to the land of the living. I am a zombie. I am a zombie. I am a zombie.
So every dead body that is not exterminated becomes one of them. It gets up and kills. The people it kills get up and kill.
Alrighty, guys, welcome to a special Friday afternoon edition of Rubber Guard Radio. It is June 19th, 2009. I am your host, Zombie Matt Manning, and this episode of Rubber Guard is brought to you by our sponsors, WrestleWarehouse.com. You can get Lucha Libre masks, t-shirts, DVDs, a whole bunch of different stuff. Tell Jeff that Zombie from Rubber Guard Radio sent you. Also, our other sponsor would be SlamBamJam.com for all your current and past Japanese and Mexican pro wrestling needs, as well as some obscure indies, some old school stuff. I highly recommend the Classic Lucha. Really good stuff there. Also, need to throw props out to the mothership. Stevie J and the boys over, can't forget Lady J, over there at AngryMarks.com. Thank you again for hosting me and having me as part of your team. I have on the line now internet wrestling community legend, the man, the myth, the super cock himself, Mr. Rob fucking Naylor. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Yo, nice to be on, man. I also like Slam Bam Jam, your sponsors. Check out that CMLL Japan, motherfuckers. It's really good.
Word. Ultimo Guerrero.
Exactly. Beautiful. And that Yakushiji guy, man, he's fucking crazy. He throws out Frankensteiners like it's fucking candy on Halloween and shit. Very good.
Awesome. My co-host hasn't called in yet, so I guess hopefully he's getting busy. But
we could hope.
Yeah, well, you know, the running gag is at the end of every show I ask him, "Hey, Rob, do you have anything to plug?" He says, "No, not yet." I said, "Well, we're gonna have to get you a website or a girlfriend." So,
one of the two would be nice. There you go.
Yeah.
Hook him up.
There it is. Well, now, Mr. Naylor, you're a lot like myself, where you have an odd taste in pro wrestling.
I do.
Well, dude, I mean, honestly,
I think people think I like everything. That's like my claim to fame. They think that I just generally like everything about wrestling. That couldn't be further from the truth in 2009. What I do like is pretty rare these days. But one of the things I like, as we'll be talking about, is wimpies. Like the squash matches of yore, you know, they're so fun to watch. And a lot of people think that's bullshit, but those people don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
Well, you know, I mean, for decades, you know, a lot of the time in territories where the job guys were the best workers because
yeah.
They had to carry these stiffs.
Yeah, I mean, Terry Gibbs, for one. There's different eras of wimpies, and I like WWF wimpies. Well, I like all wimpies, but to start, the WWF wimpies, you'd have your Terry Gibbs or your Ron Shaw from King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, and you had all these guys that could really put a good match together. Mr. X, who I think was Danny Davis, the evil referee. I mean, you had so many good wrestlers. You had Tiger Chung Lee, famous wrestler from Japan, I think. I mean, these are names that stayed with me for like 25 years. I don't remember who the last three WWF champions are, but I remember these wimpy names. Same with the NWA names. There was AWA Wimpies. There was guys like Pete Sanchez and Jake the Milkman Millman. They had these memorable names, and they were on all the fucking time because the stars weren't on every week, but more often than not, the Wimpies were. And I'm glad the term Wimpy is catching on, I think. I that's what I called them. Different areas of the country have different names for these people. Jobbers is too smart marky, in my opinion. I like Wimpies. That's a perfect name for them.
Well, I think back, A.J. Pedruzzi, Dave Barbie, you know, those those guys that would always show up in Hamburg, you know, to get murdered in 84 or 85.
Joe Murto. That Wimpy. And they go, Joe Murto. And you go, ugh! And he just stick his arm up in the air. It was horrible. And then there's the guy, Rusty Brooks, another fat Wimpy. You always thought the fat Wimpies could win because, fuck, they were fat. They seemed to have some semblance of a weight advantage, but they never did win, unfortunately. But, yeah, Rusty Brooks and Joe Murto. Dave Barbie cracks me up. I love it. Because he was like a jacked-up Wimpy. And, yeah, Hamburg, Pennsylvania, that was – and Allentown was the other place. And Poughkeepsie, New York, you know, all these people – Mario Mancini for the Italians in New York. He was a big one. Gino Carabello was another. I could go on for fucking days with these stupid-ass names. Iron Mike Sharp's almost too easy because everyone knows who he is. Steve Lombardi, much the same. But, yeah, I props to those Wimpies. We recently had a dead Wimpy, Ted Grizzly. He was a Wimpy. And everyone's like, who the fuck is Ted Grizzly? He was like this Canadian Wimpy who looked like he was a moon dog. He wore overalls, but he wasn't officially a moon dog. But Ted Grizzly is another horrible Wimpy who would never get even one offensive maneuver in. So that was always good.
Now, the Wimpies from the WWF in the early 80s, mid 80s, they just didn't do TV stuff. They also went on the road and they worked with the young person coming up, or with each other. Like, you get on 24/7, you get some of these Boston Garden shows or Philadelphia Spectrum shows, you see Dave Barbie in the second match.
You get a million SD Jones versus Mike Sharp matches, or you get Paul Roma against somebody, or CV Offey. And there was always a Wimpy that wasn't even a Wimpy, but I didn't know this. Tony Garea. I never knew he was ever a star. I just start watching wrestling when Tony Garea was like a tough Wimpy who got a lot of offense in. But Tony Garea would be on all these shows too. And that was I always liked the Wimpies that had offense. Quick Draw Rick McGraw was one of them, and then he died. He died against Roddy Piper, and other people said he died of a drug overdose, but to my youthful heart, I'd like to think he died in the ring when Roddy Piper dropped him on his head a million times. Because honestly, the WWF never really explained why he died on TV. I just saw my hero, Rick McGraw, get dropped on his head with DDTs five times by Roddy Piper, and the next week they're like, and we mourn the passing of Rick McGraw. And I'm like, oh my God, Roddy Piper killed him. So that's what I always thought. But then again, I was young and had a pea brain. But yeah, Rick McGraw.
In the 80s and the end of the 90s, the WWF Wimpies, with the exception of the Young Stallions, Jim Powers and Paul Roma, did anybody else like break through out of the jobberhood?
Let me think. I don't really think so. I mean, Paul Roma kind of hit it big. And like you said, Jim Powers. I thought a lot. I can't think of any. In the AWA, the Milkman got a nice run. NWA Wimpies, it really sucked to be an NWA Wimpy. Because an NWA Wimpy, on TV, they didn't even announce your fucking names on Worldwide. So, like, I had to learn the Golden Terror's name. I had to learn Rocky King's name, or Samuel Houston, or Vernon Deaton was another one. And then in the later times, they did announce them. Like, guys like Joe Cruz and Larry Santo actually got a fucking name drop. Aren't they lucky? But, you know, the people in 85, 84, Dusty Rhodes, for some reason, is like, yo, baby, you're here to put us over. You don't get a name drop, baby. So, like, they didn't even get their fucking names announced. Very unfortunate, because the Golden Terror was awesome. I always liked the Mask Wimpies, too, because much like the Fat Wimpies, I thought they fucking had a chance, because they had a neat outfit and a mask, but that was never the case. There was a guy called Lee Scott, who was fucking the greatest Wimpy of all time. He was like this string bean-looking motherfucker that just took back drops up to the lights. He fucking
got murdered by Cactus Jack after a tag match.
Boom. Got murdered by Cactus Jack after a tag match. Took the most vicious clothesline of all time from Sid Vicious. And that's a pun I didn't even mean to make. Stan Hansen kicked his ass. Just an awesome fucking wimpy. Then he became a referee, and it kind of hurt me a little bit because I think he missed his calling card, but I'm sure his body thanks him for that change in career.
Lee Scott. How about, I mean, you know, in the old NWA in the 80s, there were certain levels of wimpy. The top level was the Italian Stallion, who would usually headline a TV show either against one of the top guys or challenging for the TV title. And then there was Denny Brown, who was the junior champion, who always had a good showing.
Love it.
Against the heavyweights, but never won.
Yeah, my favorite wrestler, by the way, was Denny Brown.
I love Denny Brown's work.
He was
so
awesome.
Good.
I don't remember a single move he did, but I just always remember he was one of them wimpies that gave it his all. He had heart. He had moxie. He wanted to win that match, and he never really did. There was a guy, Ricky Lee Jones, who I think was Ricky Gibson, but he also always got a lot of offense in. There was Rocky Canoodle was another one, the younger brother of Don Canoodle, or at least so they told us. So that was another guy, Rocky King. You know, Rocky King is one of the best promos in wrestling history. If anyone has a YouTube clip of Jimmy Jam Garvin and Michael Hayes with Rocky King, their manager, who makes Jim Cornette look just completely mush-mouthed by comparison, please find him on YouTube. It's fucking tremendous. Rocky King for life. God bless him. Pistol Pez Watley's another one. He kind of broke out a little bit, but you're right. There were numerous levels of wimpies. Vernon Deaton, he didn't do shit. He was not a good wimpy. Leo Burke was a good wimpy. God, it's tough with the... Oh, there was a wimpy tag team, the Thunderfoots. Thunderfoot 1 and 2.
Well, why wouldn't they be called the Thunderfeet?
Whoa, I never thought of that. The Thunderfoots, that's ridiculous. That's like the Lone Ranger being two individuals. I don't know. That's very interesting. Huh, the Thunder Feet. I never thought of
it. Since we're in the big nostalgia boom where there's all kinds of different conventions and bringing in the old timers and whatever, someone needs to book the Conquistadors against the Thunderfoot.
Yeah, or Mulkeys.
First Mask.
Yeah, oh, well, there you go. Yeah, I would take the Conquistadors any day. Who knows? The Conquistadors could have been the Thunderfoot. We don't know these things. But with these conventions, you're right. To go off topic here, there's a fucking convention in Philadelphia tomorrow. It's called, like, Wizardry World. And I guess it's like a comic book thing. But apparently, my friend tells me fucking Nydia is going to be there. Isn't it amazing that Nydia, like, 8 years removed from her even being a blip on the radar, still gets booked for conventions? What a great, wonderful thing being even an F-list star on the WWE payroll is. Unbelievable. Nydia. And I'm a Nydia fan. Don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying it's amazing that fucking Nydia in the year 2009 gets banked for just showing up for
conventions. Well, the thing, Rob, is that she gives good head, so...
Well, there you go. You gotta, man, just suck the fucking life out of it. I no doubt about it. I can imagine. But I'm just saying, for her, I mean, you know what, though? You think of all the people they book, like, would you rather have Nydia at your convention for comic book people or Outlaw Ron Bass? Probably Nydia. She'd do a little better, I'm sure. But I never really thought of the logistics of such a thing, but yeah, Nydia. Unbelievable.
Yeah, she is pretty hot. With the exception of that nose, but, you know,
the nose was always kind of rough, but nobody is perfect. And she had, like, 18 boob jobs in, like, a two-month stay at the WWE, so I don't know what her current floppies are looking like, but God bless her. She was committed to the cause, man. Thank you, Vince McMahon, and whoever the surgeon is.
There you go. The question is, who paid for it? But
yeah, I would hope that Vince put out the fine dollars for those. But I don't know.
Either that or get the employee discount, you know, some doctor in Stanford, you know, there's got to be a discount.
Yeah, and if I'm a male wrestler there, I'm going to be bitching. Like, how come Vince doesn't pay for Botox for some of these aging wrestlers? Maybe he does. I don't know what their plastic surgery plan is. I'll have to, next time I talk to CM Punk, I'll have to ask him about that and make sure I know exactly what the plastic surgery plan is, because I don't know what they're offering these days, but I know all the ladies got boobies if they wanted them. So.
That's a great answer.
That's all I know.
I don't know where to go from there.
George, I don't really know either. George South, thank you. A good hand, I think that's what they refer to them as. He trained a bunch of guys who post on message boards these days. I know at least two of them. I don't know what they've done, but
I deal with one of them.
I'm sure you do.
So he was my first guest ever on show number one.
I would imagine he also likes to go to Slam Bam Jam website and pick up Lucha. That's what I'm going to guess, if it's the person I'm thinking of. But at least one of the one I'm talking about knows Lucha, like, ridiculously. It amazes me. But, yeah, George South trained a lot of guys in the Carolinas, and he's doing all right, I guess. Like, the Italian Stallion was his partner, and the Italian Stallion has ripped off a lot of people, allegedly, in the Carolina area. He trained the Hardys, I guess, and put them on TV and stole money from them, according to Matt Hardy's book. But
I don't think he trained them. I don't think there was any training involved. Getting them booked, yeah. But other than that, I don't think there was any training.
Well, that
you know, they learned it all in their backyard. So.
I thought he might have trained them how to eat spaghetti, because I hear that was the one thing that Gary, the Italian Stallion, Sabach, can do quite well. He was the world spaghetti eating champion, which probably would have got him a slot on the WWE roster these days. He still had that title.
You know, he would have fit in 93, you know, with Isaac Yankum and the
Goon. Yeah. Oh, my God, yeah. He totally should have been there. That's a good point. And he was still young enough at the time. What's his name? That fucking guy that had the mustache. Oh, good. That's great. You're going to decide that. You know who that is real quick. Let me think. He was like this asshole that had like a stupid little hat, and he had like
Big
a
Bully Music.
Thank you. Oh, my God, you're good.
Nick
Big Bully Music, the worst wrestler ever that I thought was awesome, thanks to After Magazines. He should have had, like, the World Spaghetti Eating Championship, because he looked just like Mario. That would have worked. But he's too cut. He needed to gain some weight to claim that throne. But, George South, another one. God, why can't I think of more wimpies? The Golden Care Galaxians were famous for being the people that the Mulkey brothers beat, which has to suck.
Now, who was it? Now, who was that?
I don't know. Like, it was always weird because in the NWA,
I think it was like David Isley, and I don't remember who the other one was.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was always guys that you'd see on TV, like Tommy Angel and David Isley or something, and they'd put them on their masks and they'd wrestle twice in one night, which is nice to make a wimpy guy living, because I think they got like 250 a shot. So David Isley got at least 500. You can't knock it.
Good money, shit. And he got a couple tours in All Japan out of it too. So if you read the current, the observers that are past observers that are being posted weekly now, then you go to the All Japan section and you see David Isley's name pop up.
Wow, I did not know. See, this is why I should have a subscription to Figure Four and Wrestling Observer Online. Because that sounds awesome. I would love to read these old things, but I just got to get a new password. Sup, Ryan? But, it's going to be awesome when I get a password. I'll be able to find all this stuff out. Like David Isley doing Japan tours. Who knew? I did not know this.
I had no idea either. I was like, oh, wait.
I love the old observers. It's unbelievable. The ones I had seen are just unbelievably chock full of information I did not fucking know, and I thought, For that time, I thought I knew fucking everything. It's like, Manny Fernandez did that? Really? That's crazy. So, yeah, there's always bold and new things to discover.
Now is the time to start subscribing to the Observer site, because they're going to, in the flashback editions of the Observer from 92 on, we're really close to the birth of AAA. That's going to be pretty
awesome. That
killed
it for me, because the first time I got The Observer was 93, so, like, I've seen all that. But the stuff that just blows my mind is the stuff from, like, 90 to 92. I don't think he's gone into the 80s yet, but once he goes in the 80s, that's going to be good, too. Because the 80s, I don't know shit about, so that would be good if he delved into that. Dave used to be kind of more of a prick. And I love Dave Meltzer. I will always say nice things about him. But, like, in the old issues, he takes so many more shots than he would these days. Like, the anabolic warrior, the junk food dog. Like, he was just such a bitterly sarcastic human being. It's really funny to look back on. Like, yesterday there was a news update where Dave went crazy. Did you see this? It was like a news update, and yet it was just chock full of jokes and just very sarcastic info, to the point I thought it was Alvarez that wrote the news update, but no, it was Dave Meltzer on a tirade, going ape shit on everything, making CZW jokes about people getting stabbed. I was like, my God.
Oh.
I think Dave just went over the line. He's got so tired of all the Misawa news. He's like, fuck. Unbelievable.
Well, speaking of CZW, what are your feelings on that moron, Nick Gage?
Oh, man. The whole Combat Zone thing kind of fucking scares me. Like, I'm not going to lie. Cannot even lie. I went to the Best of the Best one back in, like, 2001.
Ah, the Briscoe match.
Thank you, yes. And I had seen the Briscoes and the SATs for the first time, like, a couple months prior. So I was like, oh, my God, future wrestling. Fuck ECW. This is the person I was at the time. So I went to this soccer arena in, like, fucking Delaware or New Jersey or something. And it was called Champs. And I showed up there really fucking early with my friend just because we were early. And John Zandig was the only person there. So I show up at the door, like, what's up, motherfucker? I'm like, hi, sir, you know, I saw you get fucking AIDS dripped onto you last week in a death match. How are you doing? So I talked to John Zandig for a while, and he was kind of a nice guy. But then that night, it was just craziness, and there was chairs. It wasn't one of the more violent shows, so I didn't really get indoctrinated into all this fucking needles and mouse traps and thumbtacks and all that shit. I never really went to any of those particular shows. I did go to a Cage of Death once with Jack Evans in it, my buddy, and he almost died on that one. Yeah, he almost died on that show.
That
was running
insane.
Out the back, and I was like, Jack, you okay? And Jack's like fucking flipping shit, punching people and yelling, and there's packs hanging out of them. I'm like, oh, my God. So, yeah, that
was amazing. You mentioned that Meltzer lost it yesterday. This is the actual line from the news update. CZW is back on July 11th at the CZW Arena in Philadelphia. Maybe they can slice a guy half to death and threaten to set him on fire. Oh, yeah, they already did that.
I know. Look at that. That's crazy. Man. That's crazy. That's kind of angry. Doesn't Dave or Brian watch Big Japan anymore? Because they still do a lot of light tubes in that. Light tubes are not that much of a far-off, unknown aspect of wrestling in 2008 and 2009. I mean, they still do exist. I'm against them. I don't like any of that shit. Now, I like all the high spots and head droppy shit, and what a horrible week to say that out loud, but, like, I do. I can't. It's like, it's a rush. It's like, oh, shit, that's crazy. Wow, that's insane. I'm sorry. I admit that I'm not going to lie now that Misawa died, but I'm just saying, back in the day, I'd watch that, and I'd be like, holy shit, that's fucking crazy. And all my friends would be like, whoa, that's nuts. You know, I just have to admit that. Now I feel like a total fucking ass for it. It's like, Jesus Christ, now every time I watch it, I'm going to think of this guy dying in the ring. I mean, it's fucking terrible. I've been fucking bummed about the Misawa thing all week, and I guess Saito now is fucking suicidal, there's reports from Tokyo Sports, so it's like, shit. Just one tragedy after another. It's fucking sick. But yeah, I do like that crazy style. So I can't say, oh, well, those light tubes, that's not real wrestling. That's too dangerous. Because the other style I like is like Pac doing 18,000 flips off a fucking balcony onto somebody, or someone getting dropped on their head and shoulders or something. But, you know, different strokes for different folks. I mean, I just don't get these Tournament of Death tournaments. Like, some of my, I won't say friends, but people I know go to these things. I just can't, like, this one this week, there was, like, fucking syringes. Hey, let's watch this guy stick a syringe in this other human being's mouth, and it'll come out the other side of his mouth. Oh, and he's going to squirt water out of it. That's awesome. No, it's not. It's fucking disgusting and stupid, and it makes me want to fucking cringe and, like, run screaming. Like, I'm glad I wasn't there for that. The light tube thing I never fucking understood. It's like, let's have a 500 light tube match. No, let's up the ante a little bit. 750 light tubes. You know what? Two light tubes would be cool because you build the first light tube shot. If there's actually light tube psychology, I'm all for it. Make the light tube count. If Nick Gage gets stabbed on his first light tube, goddamn, that shitty luck, but at least it meant something. But once you fly into, like, 1,800 light tubes, and then, oh, yeah, I'm a, you know, that 117th statue almost has to death, and a helicopter has to come. Tough shit. That's your decision, man. I mean, it just sucks. And the fire got out of hand. You know, I'm a big balcony guy, not going to lie. Like, I grew up on ECW and that idiot New Jack.
Matsunaga.
And Matsunaga and all those old days of Wing. And I really like people flying high places. Can't lie. I'm scared of heights, so I admire these people for doing such. But, like, the fire, fuck that. I'm not a big fan of fire. Although when I first saw the Dudleys do it, you know, hey, everybody, come look at this. Oh, pop. Everyone loves it. But, yeah, wrestling's nuts. I mean, the fact that more people don't die on a regular basis astounds me. Just because there's a lot of crazy shit that I think everyone, myself included, takes for granted. It's like, God. And I love how everyone's like, well, can't they get, like, softer rings? What the first everyone made fun of ROH for years for, having bouncy, soft-ass rings? I mean, is everyone going to have a quasi-trampoline for a ring now? I mean, I don't know. I don't mind. I think it's cool. I never had a problem with Ring of Honor's ring anyway. But
speaking of the Hardys.
Oh, there you go. Nice transition. Love it.
No. I'm looking through Dave's update yesterday, and Osaka Pro will be having a show tonight to pay tribute to a fallen fat boy referee, who I say that with the most love. I love Ted.
Yeah.
Ted Tanabe, who passed away over the weekend as well. There'll be wrestlers from Osaka Pro, Big Japan, Joshi, Keijojo, Kagika, got me, and the greatest promotion ever, 666, will be appearing with Daisuke Sakamoto and Jackie Nomazawa on top against Shadow WX and Yuchi Taniguchi. They're going to pay tribute the way that Indy Sleaze will. And that's going to be fun. I can't wait to pick that one up at slambamjam.com.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. I do not watch a lot of the occupation of the indies. I completely admit to ignorance on that. Like, I'll watch Dick Togo pretending to be Italian against, like, Ibushi or something in a tag match. Or this or that.
Well,
that blow-up doll thing, I've seen the one thing where Kenny Omega gives it, like, a suplex and a pile driver and things of that nature. I have not seen a lot of it. DDT is cool. Like, I like Kudo and Ibushi. I'm not into more of the gimmickry that they do. It's just, like, too much. But what am I missing? You seem to be kind of hit to the scene. Like, what am I missing in these occupation of the indies of Japan?
I tend to watch workers as opposed to promotions. Like, I love Dick. I could watch Dick. That's a drop. I could watch Dick Togo all day.
Yeah, he's fucking awesome. I mean, he's probably one of my favorite wrestlers of all damn time. I mean,
he's such a dick, you know?
Yeah,
he
I mean, it never stops with him. It never stops. And everything he does is so fluid, and just he's got, like, a snap to all of his throws, and every bump he takes, it's like, Jesus Christ, he attacks the mat, Dynamite Kid style. Just really awesome. He's always been good. He's almost underrated. Yeah, I mean, people love him, but he's almost underrated how fucking good he is, and for so long. I mean, shit, he's been awesome since, like, 92 or 93. And Taka Michinoku, I think he's the opposite. I think he's overrated as shit. And granted, everyone gets older and can't do what they did when they were younger. Cool, whatever, but I'm not a big fan of his. I think Kat Hayashi's awesome. I'm just going to go through the whole KDX crew now and just put over the people I still like. Kat Hayashi's awesome. Men's Teo still rocks it. Who else? Shit. I'm sure I'm forgetting people. Grand Naniwa, he wasn't on that team, but he's one of the good guys. I always liked him dropping on his crab head. But, oh, God, there's a head drop. I don't know if I can like that anymore. Fuck. Unbelievable. Ruining everything. Jesus Christ. But, yeah, he got dumped on his crab head all the time. Fuck. I don't know.
What I do is I follow certain workers, I watch DDT regularly, as well as Dragon Gate. And also, the Pro Wrestling Expo shows have been really fun. Those are available at slambamjam.com. It's where they, you know, it's like an indie summit where they bring a bunch of indie guys together and they have them, you know, have a show, you know, at Kuroken. just wacky. The Ultimo Dragon Produce stuff has been fun. We've gotten Mecha Mummy and Minoru Suzuki within the last couple years. And I think it was the last one. I'm pretty sure it was an Ultimo Dragon show. I may be wrong, but there was the Mecha Mummy with a female Mecha Mummy.
Freaking Mecha Mummy, you know. Man. Didn't he wrestle Liger? I think he had a match at Liger one.
Yeah, he did.
Like a giant palm strike or something. I remember the visual very well. But yeah, Minoru Suzuki, okay, he's awesome. Nothing but
dude,
love.
That guy's just pure evil. You can feel the hate on every move that guy does. But that's part of his charm. That's part of his story.
Oh, yeah, and the hair alone. You can't hate that hair. The hair is fucking awesome. I mean, if I had any ability whatsoever to cut my own hair, I'd definitely do it Minoru Suzuki style. It'd be a little weird on the street, but fuck it. You know, he pulls it off. Remember the New Breed? How fucking awesome was the New
Sean
Breed?
Sean Royal and
Chris
Champion.
And Chris fucking Champion. They're my favorite team of all time. Why?
Talk about a bad car accident. Fuck them up.
Oh, they would have been what the Rockers were. They were so much fucking more awesome than Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty. Their interviews were crazy. They were like crack pipe induced interviews. They would talk about how Dusty Rhodes was the president in 2002 and how they had flying arms and one guy had a bionic arm and like their clothes were cool. It was like that 80s cool, crazy rocker look and they did crazy flying moves. I mean, I remember they did, like, this deal where they did, like, a rocker plex and a suplex in a flying crossbody. They were fucking awesome. If anyone ever makes a Best of the New Breed tape, sign me the fuck up. Cause they were, and it's weird because I love them so much, and then they just disappeared, and I literally forgot about them for, like, 2 years. I'm like, shit, where'd the New Breed go? And that was, like, it for them, I guess. I guess Chris Champion's gone on to have numerous things happen in his life, but Sean Royal disappeared for a while. He showed back up in an All Japan 1994 tag team tournament, and that's about all I ever heard. You know, I think he beefed up like 260 or something. But yeah, the New Breed, man, love them. And they had the Beastie Boys theme music, Brian Bosworth haircuts. Fuck, love it.
Yeah, buddy,
awesome.
Let's not discuss what Chris Champion did after the New Breed. You know?
Oh, I know. The Calabunga, the Ninja Turtle, and other things done in that outfit is craziness. And then he was Quang, not Quang the Ninja. It was Yoshi Kwan. I mean,
Yoshi Kwan was awesome.
He was
cool. With those fingernails, you know, ready to fucking scratch your eyes out.
Oh, yeah. He had that scary look, too. He looked kind of crazy and creepy, which probably is. Plus, of course. Chris
Champion. Imagine if Jib Mitchell, the Sinister Minister, was the manager for Yoshi Kwan.
Dude, literally said what I was thinking. Cause the only other person that had that creepy Jack Nicholson look was that, it was fucking Sinister Minister. And it was
great
fucking
minds think alike.
Yes, and I threw in the "I'm gonna get you," which is even creepier. And then he like do that gesticulations with his hands, like ha. Yes, those two would have been fucking choice. I would have loved it. And Sean Royal would have been somewhere watching and pissed off that he wasn't part of it all. But yeah, Jim Mitchell and Chris Champion is the greatest tandem I could think of. Unbelievable.
it's a shame that Sean Royal got into the car accident. You know, that did it for him. And then what did Chris Champion do after, you know, became a turtle and a molester? So.
Yeah, but, yeah, you know, downhill from there. He went to that art bar school of picking up chicks at shows. I don't know. My God, that was fucking horrible. I'm sorry. I didn't mean that.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to play a commercial so Stevie J doesn't get mad at me.
Cool. Pro wrestling got you down? Need something to lift your spirits? Listen to the podcast at angrymarks.com. If wrestling gets you all hot and bothered, we've got what you need. Visit angrymarks.com or subscribe for free on iTunes. The angrymarks.com podcast, where the marks get nothing but satisfaction.
Alrighty. Now, I won't get yelled at by Stevie J or Lady J. You know, gotta keep them happy. So, I don't want anybody to be angry with me. So,
fuck you.
What was that? God damn Mexicans. Who the fuck let that guy on here? I didn't think he had the balls to come onto my show. But let's see. Okay, we talked about wacky Japan. We talked about some wacky stuff here. Let's get even wackier. Let's talk about Wing and their love affair with Freddy Krueger and the Crypt Keeper and all these
yeah,
other.
Yeah, Wing.
Who was your favorite? Who was your favorite Wing IWA FMW monster?
The Headhunters. They were their own monsters. I fucking love the Headhunters. When I first saw the Headhunters in like a wrestler magazine in the introducing section, it was one of these fat fucks that looked like Abdul the Butcher, mid moonsault on JT Smith, and I'm like, mine eyes have seen the glory. I'm like, this is the greatest thing I've ever fucking seen. How do they do that? Then I saw another still photo of one of them doing a dropkick Pillman style off the top rope, and I'm like, Jesus Christ. I need to see footage of these people. So I eventually got DVDs of the Headhunter, or tapes at the time, and holy shit, they were as advertised, fucking awesome. They're the biggest myth of the 90s. The Headhunters, the Gladiator Mike Awesome, and Big Titan should have been the top four guys in the WWE of that decade. And I'm sad that was not the case. Fuck you, Stone Cold. They'd have done way better business.
You know, it was always, you know, referred to or hinted at or people assumed that those two boys were the sons of Abdullah the Butcher. I think so. They look just like him.
They very well could have been. I don't know. I saw that Abdullah the Butcher did a shoot interview once, and he claimed that I'm the top man. I'm the best. And he's like, those two guys imitate me, but they can't do what I can do. And I immediately stopped and paused and was like, wait, you stab people and waddle around like a fat fuck and bleed occasionally, and they do incredible moves. They do fucking flying around. They are unbelievably awesome, and you suck, Abdullah the Butcher. So I hope they're not related to him, because Abdullah the Butcher's in a fucking fantasy land. Oh, but he can get heat. Yeah, great. Heat's really fun to watch fucking 70 years after your career started. But
yeah.
I like the Headhunters. They had that glass match, which I was talking about how I hated all that earlier. Loved it. Fucking glass versus glass match with the Headhunters. Unbelievable. And they were called A and B, which is also kind of funny.
Now, that glass match was A versus B, correct?
Yes.
Yes. That's the IWA glass death match. If I remember, that's the name of the commercial tape.
Yeah, and I saw it on
the Ponzi
video, so it was even worse.
I mean, I love that stuff too, but back then, they actually used psychology, and the guys can go out and work. They didn't have to do that stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, where they will go on a tour, and guys would usually maybe be in one barbed wire match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the exception
or like
of
you see Funk get the flaming chair out one time, you know, and that made the flaming chair a huge deal. So you'd want to get that tape to see, holy shit, Funk had a flaming chair. And like ECW tried to do fire five shows in a row, and it got caught in the audience and nearly killed five people, and you know, overdoing things, man, it ruins it. Don't overdo things, kid.
Yeah. Now, what was your favorite garbage promotion in Japan?
I gotta go with FMW, just because I thought they had a good mix, like especially when the Headhunters and Gladiator and all them guys jumped. Like, there was the Funk Masters of Wrestling angle. Onita was scary as shit. He had cool entrance music. Pogo I never liked. I liked the undercard with Hayabusa and Masato Tanaka, and like they just seemed to have better undercard guys. And I loved the Gladiator, Mike Awesome. He was like my favorite. So
Gladiator.
Yes, Gladiator. And then he'd do promos going, I'm sick of this shit. Fuck! And then I'd be like, how is he allowed to curse? I'm like, oh, they're in Japan. Okay.
Horrible. But horrible.
It was
horrible promos, but they were in English, and the Japanese people didn't care.
Yeah, you'd be like, hey, Onita, fuck you! You're gonna die! And then they go to the ring. I'm like, what?
So bad.
Like, what's he doing? What's he talking about? And then Victor Quiñones would have terrible interviews, too. He'd be saying all kinds of weird shit. I'm like, oh, God, look out. But yeah.
Well, you know, when FMW first started, you know, they were using the martial arts guys, and, you know, they were doing all kinds of different shit. They used Leon Spinks. They got Leon Spinks over in a wrestling promotion.
Yeah, they did. And Sabu and the Sheik had that match.
The fire match.
Yeah, man. They had that fire match. I remember seeing that. That was nuts. The fire match is ridiculous.
Oh, that stuff was fun.
Oh, you know, yeah, it was fun. In 1992, I had a trip to San Jose, and I picked up a Pro Wrestling Illustrated there. And my uncle was like a legitimate wrestler, like one of those boring amateur people. So he was like a wrestler. This magazine I picked up had a picture of that fire match. It had a picture of like Eric Embry getting doused by battery acid in his eyes by the Moondogs and, you know, USWA. And my uncle just looked at the magazine and he goes, "How do you buy that shit? It's just so fucking fake and phony and stupid." And I'm like, "I love this. This is my favorite." And I proceeded to buy it. But it's weird because at the time I thought shit like Papa Shango was stupid and phony and stupid. But, like, I guess it's all about perspective because I thought battery acid was cool and I also thought fire was great, dude.
Well, the thing for me with the Japanese garbage stuff is that back then in the day, you know, it was enjoyable. It was, and they told stories and they had programs and things made sense. And as opposed to, who can top who, whose cock's bigger, I'm gonna take so many light tube shots. Like that sure, you're tough.
Yeah, like Onita was so integral to all that too. Like he was the guy. His big death match every couple months was like such a fucking huge deal. And like, you know, once Onita kind of stopped being over, I think it all kind of died. All right, fuck it. No one cares.
Oh, Hayabusa should not have been the one to carry the company after 96, but that's just me. I never saw him as a main eventer.
Yeah, I did, but I just didn't realize how Japanese people didn't see him, because obviously everything flopped. No one cared. I thought he always tried hard, and he always really gave a good effort, and he was over. But nobody could have been Onita over. It was kind of a kiss of death. Maybe if they would have fostered in another deathmatch guy and then trickled down to Hayabusa, that could have worked. But, yeah, you're right. It was just a big rush job. Hayabusa got thrown in too fast and ultimately didn't work out.
And if you look back, even at the FMW TV, if you watch the TV show, you even get the feeling of the Memphis style, because Fuchi and Onita obviously spent time in Memphis. They were in one of the concession stand brawls. And, you know, and they took that, and they took what they learned with Tenryu from the Amarillo territory in Texas, and they brought Texas and Memphis to Japan.
Oh,
and
yeah, not like that. We're not naming a valuable guy. Wing Kanemura, despite his more recent indiscretions, Wing Kanemura was fucking insane. I mean, the biggest thing when I was getting into the death matches was see Wing Kanemura powerbombed into fire. You know, it's like, oh my God, what the fuck is that? And when I saw that, I was like, Jesus Christ, what are they doing? And then he came to the U.S., the Smoky Mountain, and Kevin Sullivan stabbed him 57 times, and it was
brutal.
Fucking horrifying. And I'm like, oh my God. And then, like, he kind of went away for a while as far as me finding out what he was doing, because I just wasn't following it. But then he kind of came back into like the late 90s with Hayabusa and Masato Tanaka.
No respect. Oh, yes. I'm doing the dance, but I'm not in sumo underwear, though.
The Wing Kanemura.
Fire Pro Wrestling.
Love it. Love it, love it, love it. And I wish Wing Kanemura would have had his ECW pay-per-view match with Masato Tanaka. Don't know if you remember that. They're supposed to face a pay-per-view in 97 or 8, and instead, Wing Kanemura didn't show up, and Doug Furness showed up instead, and it was just a fucking disaster.
Hey, that's not a problem for me, man. I love the Can-Ams, man. They were a great team.
Oh, I thought it would have been the greatest thing ever. I'm sure Paul Lee was thinking Misawa had great matches with Furness. Tanaka's much in the mold of Misawa. They're going to kill. It's going to have an unbelievable match, but it just ended up being such a horrible disconnect between the two of them. I mean, that's one of the worst matches of all time.
Well, speaking of Furness and LaFon, 96, 97, 98, the WWF tag team scene was really underrated. You had the Body Donnas, You had Furnace and LaFon. You had the New Rockers. And that's some really good shit. I mean, really,
it
really
is,
good.
It is, but ultimately Furnace and LaFon fucked themselves because they never got over. And I think in the WCW, if they had Pierre and Jacques to work with, or the Steiners in particular, Jesus Christ, all I wanted in the 90s, aside from, well, I wanted the Steiners and Furnace and LaFon to hook up, and they would have done it if Furnace and LaFon went to WCW. Because Kevin Sullivan was trying to get Furnace and LaFon in WCW. They were, Furnace at least was working for ECW, and he had that Rob Van Dam match. And, oh, yeah, then LaFon came, too, and they had some really good matches there with Lance Storm and Candido, which were unbelievable matches. And Sabu and RVD had a match with them. But I'm with you. I love that tag team. I just wish they would have went to WCW. They'd have been buried, but at the same time, I think they would have had a chance getting over. Maybe they could have fought Psicosis and La Parca, which would have been fucking ridiculous. I mean, I don't know. I'm having dream matches here in my head, but that one sounds awesome.
Well, yeah, there's a tape out there that it's a Coliseum home video called Free for All, where they're all dark matches. And there's one it's a four-way tag match with the Body Donnas, Furnace and LaFon, New Rockers, and I think what's the other team? I think it's the Godwins.
Yeah, probably.
But it was what might have been either it wasn't Survivor Series. It was something else. And it was just a blow-away match where Candido just stole the show. And, you know, I was just amazed that they didn't save that for the pay-per-view. And that's probably one of my favorite Coliseum home videos ever. I just love it. It's got the Yokozuna, Steve Austin match from one of the In Your Houses. It was a dark match. Go figure.
Yeah, Candido and Jannetty, man, they were really good. They were quite underrated. I just saw Sim Snuka got fired, by the way.
He did,
WWE. Yeah, Candice Michelle's gone, too.
Good.
Expect more cuts. They're all fucked. I'll just play it. I'll just fucking around. But they did get fired. Candice Michelle's gone. She can go buy five more noses. And Sim Snuka don't have to miss catching Undertaker anymore. So. Unbelievable.
Now,
they're never there.
Now, you say you're a self-professed fan of CM Punk.
No, the thing is...
Now, tell me.
I'm
me
not.
This, just,
like,
and,
I initially wasn't. He wanted to punch me in the face. Because me and CM Punk, our friendship goes back to Teddy Hart, which I wanted Teddy Hart to kick the shit out of him. Like, I was so the Teddy Hart apologist. So, like, I always saw Punk as being, like, a huge dickhead for the whole Teddy Hart thing. But somewhere along the line, I just start talking to the dude and became buddies. And I'm a fan of his. The last 3 years, believe it or not, I've wanted him to do good, but I've always felt he's been miscast in the WWF. I think he's done better than he's ever would have dreamed of doing, no doubt about that. But I am thrilled with the idea that he may be turning bad. I think that's going to be such a fucking giant deal if that's where they go with it, which it seems like all things are pointing that way. But I'm going to be a huge fucking CM Punk fan if he turns bad, I'll tell you that much.
Because
CM Punk, by and large, is a fucking prick. I mean, I love him, but he's not a nice guy. And, like, he's good to his friends, but he needs to be evil. He needs to be a bad human being. He needs to be a bad wrestler. He needs people not to script out every last word of his promos. He needs to drop that, gee, guys, I like to drink milk, and I'm a competitor. Fuck all that shit. It's fucking terrible. I hated watching him for, like, the first 2 years. He would be good in the ring, but, like, I didn't connect to where they were going with him, competition and competitor. It's just all the old hokey WWF Bob Backlund drink your milk old shit that I didn't like anyway. But I think right now, oh, fuck. I mean, this is a jump off, man. You give 3 more months to his heel turn and fuck. Sky's the limit. In my opinion, I could be wrong. I'm just saying, I think there's never been a better chance. Like when he won the belt the first time, right? I was happy, but there was this unsettledness where, shit, Batista's not going to put him over. Kane's not going to put him over. Like, I just knew that all these guys weren't going to put him over. And by and large, they put him over on house shows, but no one ever put him on TV. I thought it was a fucking disastrous reign. And then it's like, we're taking it off you with Randy Orton. And then, like, that should have been a way bigger deal than it was, but no. It just was like, okay, Randy Orton did that. Randy Orton beat him. Okay, next. We're going to give him the Intercontinental belt. Great. But now, when he won the belt now, it's like, fuck. Love the way he did it. Love the connection to the way he won it the first time. Jeff Hardy's fucking awesome. Edge is great. I think everything around him right now just really is good for his career, and I think it's going to be fucking 6 months of really good TV on SmackDown. That's the way I see
now,
it. I think Raw is unwatchable. I am so fucking happy he's on a new show.
The question is, will the WWE writing team recycle Gabe Sapolsky's I'm better than you type of character?
I would like it, but obviously they can't go full-blown with the drugs and the alcohol. But I think it would get over. I just think they're fucking going to pussyfoot around with it and not do it the right way if they do it. Like, cause on the Indies, Punk could swear. He could fucking pretend to slap fans. Like, he had a more dislikable aura. I don't think on a big stage it's going to be tougher to project that. But regardless, he's got that prick sneer going on. He's on a promo. He could be just completely dislikable. Right now he's walking the line on the commentary last week. I think it's going to be really good. I don't think they're going to go the Punk of Honor way, but I don't know. We shall see. I don't know. I'd like to hope they do that, but I will say this: when I get free tickets to WWF shows from now on, I'm gonna be way happier going because it will be good shit. I love getting free tickets. Thank you for numerous sources within the WWE that helped me out. But all I'm saying is, it's not gonna be oh shit going to this house show, but yeah, this will be sucky. No, now I'm pumped. Like, this is gonna be a good fucking show. Like, I'm pretty jacked up about it.
Well, I don't usually follow the WWE or watch it. I follow it just because that's what I do. I'm a creature of habit. But the CM Punk title win this last time and the Jericho Ray program has got me a hard on.
That finish, fucking great.
At Extreme Rules, oh, brilliant. Ripping off the mask, good
yep.
stuff.
Oh, yeah. And now they can go further with that. And I think as a heel nucleus, if you have Punk and Jericho as your top two, you turn Edge good guy, and you have Rey Mysterio, Jeff Hardy, Taker's going to be back. I just think that show's going to be fucking great. I like the idea of turning two people around the same time, it's Edge and Punk, just because it freshens shit up. And Edge, I think Edge is awesome. I think Edge is the most valuable guy on the entire show. He's fucking unbelievably good. Like, I can't put him over enough. And he's one of the few guys that will lose to new guys to get them over. He's the guy. Like, he has a million accolades to Edge. He's fucking amazing. So hopefully Edge is good.
Now, do you think that Ray's going to lose his mask at the Bash?
I hope he doesn't. I mean, if he does, it doesn't matter because I've already seen him without a mask. It's not going to break my heart. But what is it? Is it mask versus hair?
Mask versus title.
Oh, that's fucking stupid. Of course he's not going to lose his mask. That actually pissed me off right there. He's going to win the belt. Oh, man. I don't know. Maybe they'll...
Before the Extreme Rules pay-per-view, I was on the Angry Marks podcast, and... we were talking about what we think would go down, and I was hoping that it would be mask versus hair. That way, there's more intrigue.
Yeah. Title
as opposed to just the belt. It's a fucking prop, you know. The hair is different, and it's not like Jericho would really miss it because he's got short hair. So I mean, it's not like,
but
his
hair is so. That's such an integral part to his character, like.
Exactly. That's fine. It would mean more if you were to lose it.
An incredibly meaningful match, and then oh shit. Then people would be more like, oh well, Rey Mysterio's gonna lose because he's already been up. Now you just get the vibe of oh well, he's gonna win because it's just a fucking stupid belt. Maybe they'll fool us. Maybe we'll lose and they'll be the ultimate people laughing. But the sad thing is they won't get me to buy based on that fucking stipulation.
Well, I'll tell you this. The WWE stockholders need to email, call, fax, messenger pigeon, anything to Titan Towers to tell Vince McMahon not to have Ray lose his mask because it's a bad marketing idea. Because Ray masks, they just blow off the shelves. And I'm not just talking at WWE events. I'm talking about at indie events, lucha shows. I mean, I worked a couple months ago, it was last month, I worked a convention up here in Northern California, and we sold so many Mysterio masks.
Yeah, dude, it's surprising. Sometimes on TV you don't get the vibe, but the one guy that I got the vibe of at a house show back in, like, 2005 was RVD. My fucking God, he was over. Like, the entire house show, he might have been more over than Batista. This is in Reading, Pennsylvania, mind you. But I was just stunned. Kids loved RVD. Adults loved, chicks loved RVD. Like, every demographic loved RVD. That's when I said, you know what? Like, when he won the belt, it did not surprise me. But what did surprise me was just how fucking over he was in 2004 and 5. When he wasn't necessarily getting that big a push. I know he beat Cena that one time, but, like, he was basically a guy dangling in the mid-card, not doing anything, who Vince, I think, should have pushed a little harder. Now, granted, his lifestyle outside the ring fucked him over. That's his own fault. But RVD's over his shit. If any indie company or any, you know, third-party non-WWE company wants to get something moving, give RVD.
He doesn't want to do it.
He doesn't want to do it.
He, you know, he's busy with RVD TV, you know, like 70-plus episodes of that shit.
I'm not going to lie. I've actually seen some of it. And maybe it's the RVD mark in me, but I'm actually thoroughly entertained by it. Like, I think it's fucking
something
amazing.
Completely different.
It's, I mean, him and Samoa Joe talking about the throes of passion, not with each other, but with their wives. I mean, what an unusual, unique angle. It's not like, yeah, bitches. It's just these two deep dudes just sitting down talking. Now, whether they blazed one before they talked, I don't give a shit. I find it intriguing. The one where they sat down with the ultimate hellwig and that dude that's from Harvard, and they all discussed, you know, the power of the mind. Nowinski, they discussed the power of the mind. Fucking unbelievable. And was Van Damme and Warrior out of their minds? Yes, they were. Was I watching the entire time and not missing a word? Yes, I was. It's unfucking believable. Everyone, if you haven't checked out RVD TV, please do so. I'm not just saying that because I'm a giant RVD mark. I find him very interesting.
Yeah, you guys need to check out the Best of RVD TV Volume 1. They picked and chose, you know, some of the best stuff to put on. It's just blow away stuff. Just fun. And
it's just strange. It's fucking strange. You're watching it, and you're like, what are you, like, even his workouts. You just think, like, workout, that's boring. No, he shows you how he fucking uses this surfboard gimmick just to get balance, and, like, he uses, like, one of those fucking, not a menopause ball, but it's one of these whack-ass, like, balls that you could walk up and down on. It looks like a total thing that, like, some 50-year-old chick would use to work out, but RVD shows you ways to use it that would actually get you more ankle and knee strength and better flexibility. Oh, I was like, holy shit, that's interesting. He just has a new slant on things, and it's like, all right, I'll check this out. He's full of himself, yes, but at the same time, it's cool to see someone that almost doesn't love wrestling too much. I mean, I think sometimes that's a detriment, as we saw last weekend. Like, you could push so hard, but sometimes it's kind of a good thing to see people get out before it's, you know, too late. So, props to
RVD. Now, tell me this, Rob. How long do you think Chris Masters' this coming stint with the WWE will be?
Not long at all. He seems like a cool guy. I just think he's going to be miscast again. I think they're going to give him the Masterpiece gimmick, which is so fucking wooden. It's fucking terrible. Look at what happened with Lex Luger as the Narcissist. It's just such a boring, lame, Vince McMahon, bodybuilding rules the world, stupid worldview of how people get heat or care about things. Chris Masters should be like this jockey fucking frat boy asshole that talks shit to all the divas.
Put him with the Spirit Squad. That one big dude that could handle business.
Yes,
like
exactly.
The Mean Street Posse had Joey Abs, the big dude.
Yeah, I agree. And the Spirit Squad, for all the shit it got, was fucking awesome. I mean, there was nothing wrong with that. I just wish they'd have taken Ken Doan, and once they got the respective guys out of the Spirit Squad, I wish they'd have found more interesting things to do with them. I personally think that the fucking writers that WWE has are fucking the worst. I think you all fucking suck shit. There's not, I mean, granted, are they writing for a mainstream audience? Maybe. Are ratings down sometimes? Yes. I don't know who the fuck they're writing for. I felt like a fucking idiot watching Vince McMahon do that promo with that fake dude from the Nuggets. I was like, so embarrassing.
You know what's funny about that guy? That guy that played him, he was he's the ring announcer for my friend Jeff Dino's company in San Diego.
Yeah, I heard. I had heard that my good close personal buddy Excalibur was going to be the guy, so I tuned in. But then I was happy to see that someone else got it anyway. But yeah, that was kind of funny how that all worked out.
Call in now.
Yeah, we've got a caller, folks. Party don't stop. So yeah,
no,
just very
I'll text it to you.
An insult to all of our intelligence. I will keep talking, and I just don't like the writing for WWE. I think they need to go back to stage one and figure something out.
Now, I'll tell you, I knew a couple days ahead of time that my friend's ring announcer was going to play that Nugget guy, and I had to bite my tongue, and I was like, dude, this sucks.
Yeah.
But, you know, he got a good payday.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he did. I mean, that's part of the tough part, too, when you do find out stuff. On the indies, a certain numerous number of people's fucking ears and insight, and some of the shit I find out sometimes is like, holy shit, you know, and then when it actually gets announced. A lot of times when I find out shit earlier than I'm supposed to, I think, man, people are going to go nuts for this. And so, like, a lot of times when they don't, I'm like, what? I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, come on. That's fucking awesome.
Now, the next time that, which should be, I think it's a couple weeks where the WWF will be up here in Northern California. I owe Harry Smith at least a drink. I fucked his career over by reporting that he was going to be the newest member of Legacy. And they changed the plans and, you know.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that was me who broke it.
Oh, wow. That's rough.
One of my contacts in FCW let me know, and I was like, okay, well, fuck it, man. Why not?
The oddest thing is, though, I think something – Randy Orton say something about it anyway? I don't know.
After, yeah.
After shit. That sucks.
Yeah. I was like,
yeah, oh, damn. Yeah, Harry's a good dude. I'm begging that dude to get a good break. It sucks. He's such a nice kid, though. Like, I was friends with all those Canadian guys. Like, the whole hard crew. Like, I went to the Cauliflower Alley, and I know, like, what the fuck's the brother's name? Shit, not the crazy one. Not Bruce, but one of the other brothers was there, and I was talking to him. And Harry's always been really nice. I mean, I just hope he onward and upward. I haven't seen any of his ECW stuff. I love Tyson Kidd or TJ Wilson. I think he's unbelievably good.
They're a really good team. They had a really good match with Christian and Swagger last week.
Yeah, I don't awesome. Like to my. Detriment, I don't watch much of the WWF programming. I should just fucking TiVo it or whatever.
Just watch ECW. Just watch ECW.
Oh, yeah, I should, because I love Matt Sydal and TJ Wilson, and I think the whole Hart Foundation thing sounds really awesome, and Christian's been really good. And that Jack Swagger, I saw him and Christian on a house show. They were really good, so I'd
Jack
like to see for that.
Jack future. He just needs a manager. But
oh, yeah, definitely.
I would like to welcome to the show the host of, I think it's a dead show, but, you know, the Lucha Listening, the Fat Man, Tony Calvin. Tony, welcome to the show. I have Mr. Rob Naylor on. We're just shooting the shit about pretty much everything. So,
all right.
So, Rob, you want to stay on, Rob?
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
Yeah, I'll stay on. That's cool.
Cool. How current are you with your Lucha, Rob?
Me?
Yes.
Oh, me. I am not as current as I should be. I watch a little bit for Jack and Teddy, but I do not watch any of the CMLL, which I'm told is quite good these days.
Well, we're not going to be talking the CMLL. It's Triple Mania time of the year, so we're going to discuss Triple Mania.
Cool.
Now, Rob, are you happy that Teddy has turned on Jack?
Yes, because Teddy Hart is an asshole, and Jack Evans is all that's good in the world, so I think that's a good move. I think Jack was a great heel, though. I think people underrate how good of a heel he was. But, hey, fuck it. They said let's turn Jack and let's keep Teddy bad guy, and that's it. I'm a big Sean Waltman fan, too. Hopefully he's still down there. I'm one of the few Sean Waltman, like, giant marks, you know. I mean, even with the Joni Lauer tape, I got to admit, like, that aside, I don't think Sean Waltman's done anything bad in his entire career. Way to go, buddy.
God. So, Tony, I know we haven't seen the show yet. Okay, we haven't gotten it.
Especially on YouTube and in a couple of places. So I've seen enough of the show.
Well, that's YouTube, and I just can't go there. So I'm a torrent guy. So I have bad eyes. I'm old, so. I can't,
yeah,
you know, look at a little screen. But, Tony, do you think that this year's Triple Mania was a success?
Yeah, I don't know. It was a success. I mean, unless some things go wrong, like maybe Wagner not showing up at the main event or, you know, just a bad attendance. Otherwise, it's a success. I just question whether or not what level, the height of success it should have been.
Hmm. I want to see the buy rates to see how they did.
Yeah, because it was an exclusive. Hello?
I'm on.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if anything, usually they'll eventually have the pay per views on TV, but this year around, just all pay per view.
Yeah,
they have no
DVD
plans on television.
Yes. With the killer, with the psycho. Clowns or Psycho Circus?
Yep.
The three clowns will be in the dark match, so they will be on the DVD. And obviously they won because they're still undefeated. Yes, I love the zombie clown. I'm partial.
As you should.
That's right. So now that we're in Mexico, orale. Rob, who is your favorite mini ever?
Oh, God, the guy that's coming to America in August for Chicago.
Oh, he was Masterita here.
Masterita Torada, baby. Love it. Wow. That's going to be one of my favorite things I've done all year.
He was up here in Northern California May 30th, and I couldn't get to the show.
Aw. Well, Jack Evans tells me that the original Masquerita Sagrada, who's with AAA or whoever the Masquerita Sagrada with AAA is, he claims without his mask he looks like myself, and I am 5'2". So I'm not saying I'm Masquerita Sagrada, but I'm saying I'm pretty damn close because I was stunned at this because I love all the Masqueritas. I don't care what the fuck their names are. They're all great. Espectrito was fucking amazing back in the day. Got nothing but love for the minis. Mini Damien's unbelievable now. I mean, that's my...
Talk about a heel.
Yeah, man, that's my piece. I love Mini Abismo Negro was unbelievable too. That guy, just awesome bass, love him.
Five minis.
About what's the Puerto Rican one?
Jerito Estrada. No, that's way off. I like Nero's too.
I saw P. Ross out here on the 7th, and he was fun. He lost to Octagon Cito, who's awesome. Octagon Cito rules.
Yeah, they're both freaking awesome.
Yeah,
I wish someone in America would just start a minis promotion.
Micro Wrestling Federation. Come on, you've seen it. The banners for the Micro Wrestling Federation was all midgets.
Oh, well, I don't know if it's as good as the minis down there, but I hope it is. Like, that, I mean, I talk to Gabe Sapolsky every now and then, and the one thing that remains constant in the last 4 years is me bugging the shit out of him to bring in Masquerita Sagrada 2000, a.k.a. Masquerita Dorada. That's why now the Quack is bringing him in for one shot. I'm just blown away. I could not believe when I read that. I'm like, holy shit. And the reaction wasn't what it should be. This is a guy that could fucking flip the script on wrestling as we know it in America. He's like when Rey Mysterio and Psicosis came over in 95, in my opinion. He's just so fucking spectacular. I hope people appreciate it.
I love the match he had with Mini Damian from the Ultimo Dragon Produce Show.
That one. Oh my God, that was amazing. Unbelievable. Damn. That's the kind of match you could show anyone that's not even into wrestling and be like, what the fuck was that shit? And they just have to watch more of it. I love it. I love that kind of stuff.
35 rotations on the head scissor, make Claudio angry.
Oh, that's awesome. I love it. I love that. I mean, when they throw him up like a piece of pizza and he comes down with a head scissor. Unbelievable. He's just great.
I think what I've seen recently, he's up to like 7 rotations now. It's insane.
Yeah, he's sick. He is fucking sick.
And the thing is, he did that that flip Rana out of the ring and, landed on his head and broke his skull before, and he still does it.
Yeah, and all that shit where he's bouncing on the fucking post, that's insane, too. I'm not trying to do that shit. No way. I've been on the top rope. That's fucking crazy. I'm not trying. And you're a midget. I'm sorry. They're my own people. I can say this apparently. But when you're that little, when you're that high, man, you fall. You're like a bunch of soup on the floor. So you gotta really watch this crazy height. Crazy bastards.
Rob Naylor, I have to ask. Inquiring minds want to know: are you the one underneath the Frightmare mask in Chikara?
Oh, look at that. I've been asked that twice now. No, not that I know of. I do train at the Mark Mess Training School, so that could maybe tip some people off of thinking, but I'm a complete pussy who would never do anything full-time. So, no, I am not Frightmare. I'm sorry to tell you.
I enjoy that kid's work.
He's great,
fun to watch.
Definitely. A lot of people think it's Pelly Primo, too. But I think he's retired from the business, so it probably is not.
Well, Frightmare is thicker than Primo.
Yeah, that's another reason to say it's not him. But I'm saying some people do think it's him, so who knows? It's a mystery. But yeah, that little dude's good, too. And I love Hella Wicked. I think Hella Wicked's the most underrated guy on the indies. He should have gone so much farther than he has. He's very good.
Go to Sleepy Hollow. Money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's so much better than Delirious. It's scary. It's just sad that one has gotten so many opportunities and the other has not. And I like Delirious. I'm just saying, Hella Wicked's the fucking king.
Yeah, that's
recognized.
Yeah, exactly. Those two guys. I don't understand why Hella Wicked hasn't broken out.
Initially, I blame Quack, because Quack sometimes treats his guys like indentured fucking servants. But I do think that maybe, I don't know, I really don't know. I know Gabe's a huge fan of Hella Wicked, so I think Gabe didn't book him for ROH just because Delirious was right there and the similarities, whereas I'd have looked at it as, gee, they're a tag team everywhere else and getting over big time. Why don't we spice up Delirious and put, an idiot could have told Gabe that. But for some reason, he had different plans, so whatever. But ultimately, I do think Hella Wicked would have been a part of Ring of Honor if Gabe stuck around. I'm not sure what Adam Pearce is into. So.
Well, let's not discuss Adam. We're not going to bring up
I'm begging you not to, please. Good.
Every time I bring up Adam on the show, I get in trouble. So I don't want any bad phone calls from Mr. Pierce this evening.
No, I like Adam Pierce. I think he's doing a better job with the TV than he was a month ago. I think the TV is great. I have no problem with it. I'm going to a TV taping tomorrow. So hopefully it's good. The ones on Saturday usually are.
So, Tony.
Yeah.
I'm
still here.
Hey, sorry.
Tonight. And last Friday night, Oliver John and the rest of the Border Patrol have been working Tijuana. Have you heard any rumblings, what type of heat they've been getting or anything down there? I haven't. Ollie's been
word
really
of late,
busy.
No word as of late. No word as of late.
Well, I know what kind of heat they can get, so... if they can bring that kind of heat in Tijuana, we're going to hear about riots again. Then Bob Barnett will have to go down and film, so there'll be evidence. But yeah, I miss the insanity of Tijuana. You know, the riot with Rey Mysterio in 2001. All that fun shit. BobBarnett.com.
Oliver John's really good. I saw him at the Cauliflower Alley. He's one of the few people on that show they had that I thought was pretty awesome.
Was that this year or last year?
This year. He was in a Battle Royal, and they had like a four-way match for some belt with Chris Hero was in it too. And
the Heritage title.
Yeah, and the whole show, in my opinion, was one of the worst shows of all time. Superstar Billy Graham said that was the greatest show I've ever seen, but I'm pretty sure he's bullshitting. But yeah, the main event was really good because it had Oliver John, as you said. I had not heard of him prior to that. And Chris Hero and a couple other really good wrestlers.
So. You know what's kind of strange about that is Oliver will even tell you, last year's Cauliflower Alley main event, he felt was better, where he beat Go Shiozaki.
Oh, wow. That sounds awesome. Yeah, that sounds like a great match. I'd like to track that down.
ProWrestling-Revolution.com. You should be able to get it there. I know there are clips of it on YouTube, but you can get it from Gabe Ramirez. He'll take care of you.
I'll be a good one.
Since he helped run the show with Cauliflower Alley. So.
Nice.
Now, Go Shiozaki. Rob, do you think he's going to make a good champ?
I think it's all really difficult to say. It's just such... I talked to Hero a little bit. He's been over there for this whole entire thing. It's been rough, you know. I mean, Hero wrestled Saito yesterday and got pretty much knocked out with a kick. I don't think Saito's really all with it. I think he's been pretty damaged by the whole thing. There's been reports today at Tokyo Sports that he was suicidal. I don't know. I know Hero's not been told anything toward that from the office. So I'm not sure if that's just. I don't know if that's just, you know, people saying stuff or what, but it's bad. Everybody over there is really shaken up, I guess, and you know, you all know, you've seen the footage too. It's just fucking tragic. But I don't know. I mean, I hope Go does. I like Go a lot, but it's just obviously not the way you want to give him the belt, and just. They got to regroup over there big time. So.
Yeah, I think they're going to hand him the ball and let him go.
I like Go Shiozaki. I know a lot of people talk some shit on him and think he's bland or boring or doesn't have flashy enough offense, but I've always thought he was very good. I thought the match he had with Hero was fantastic recently over there. I don't know. I think he's a good guy to go with, but you got to have credible contenders. I wish I elevated Nakajima to a main event slot because those two will fucking tear shit down.
Well, I have the feeling that the next major program, I hope, is Go and Bison. Mark has been ready for 3 years for the belt. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, and he's a very large American that moves like AJ Styles and can put in time. So,
but now that the head racist of Noah's no longer with us, you never know what'll happen. And you know that's a shoot, and Misawa did hold back the Gaijin, so we'll see what'll happen now.
There you go. Should be interesting. I don't know. I hope Hero gets more toys. I was surprised he went back over anyway. I don't think he was even expecting to, and they just basically called him up. He stayed extra time last time. He obviously loves staying in Japan and learning and. You know, they treat him pretty good over there. I couldn't believe he got the Takayama match, which I just watched. It was pretty good. You know, he, not too stiff or anything. God knows Takayama, you know, don't hit him too hard. It worries me. But it was pretty good little match.
His face is like Brutus Beefcake's.
Oh, my God, yeah. So he's said to be a really good guy, but, man, he's stiff, man. It was those clubbing overhand, you know, blows. Does anyone throw punches in Japan? I thought about this the other day. Like, who throws good punches in Japan? It's so much
no one.
Strike and chop oriented. Nobody does. It's really
they're all forearms.
Yeah, like
all
Gedo
forearms.
Does, but Gedo watched Memphis and loves it. But like, aside from Gedo, I can't think of anyone in Japan that throws punches. It's such a weird thing that I came to a realization about. I'm like, shit, nobody throws punches in Japan. I'm like, all right, it's weird.
So. I was rude and I cut you off, Tony. I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's your show, man.
Yeah, you have me on, and I never shut the fuck up, but yeah, I apologize myself.
So, any word of Dr. Wagner signing a contract since he won the Mega
yes.
title, AAA?
Yes, he's signed an exclusive deal with AAA. He's going to wrap up all his indie shows that he's already agreed to be part of, and he's going to be an exclusive for AAA for at least a year.
Hmm. Tremendous.
So I don't know if that was part of the deal of him winning the title or not, because the booking situation seemed to be it could go either way. And I think if you really want to sell the fans on Triple Mania, you got to guarantee them Wagner winning the title. So, you know, if they had done that, I think they would have done a lot better. I just felt like they left a lot of money on the table. Because, no offense, God bless Macias. He's really come up to the play as far as, you know, just performance and just being a reliable guy. But nobody really cares about him as far as the top spot. I mean, in his match with Macias, everybody just freaking turned on him and just freaking booed him the second he got any offense in. It was kind of sad.
Hmm. So my feeling is that that Macias should take a 6-month tour, you know, back to Puerto Rico, just disappear, freshen up, and you know, get some new juice, and come back.
That's if he doesn't go to prison, right?
Well, yeah. Oh my God! Can you believe that? That is insane.
Yeah, I know.
That's nuts.
Him, Billy, and one of the pirates, right?
Yeah.
I think that's who it was. Yeah, they got into an altercation. I think it was, I don't know if it was the night of the Triple Mania show or the night after that
it was the night after.
They messed up quite a few patrons at, what was it, a local taco shop or something?
Yeah. You know, it was funny, man, because that dude got pissed off at Macias, you know, for doing the coke in the car that this guy took Macias to go buy. Like, dude, that's messed up on so many different levels.
I think he's on bail now, but yeah, if he'd be wise to be gone from Mexico for a while.
I'd like to welcome to the show the most hardcore Canadian, Mr. Peter H. What's up, Pete?
Not much. How you guys doing?
Just hanging out. Just a real wacky show today.
Yeah.
We're all over the place. I talked to Mr. Naylor early in the show about Ray and Jericho. Pete, what are your feelings on that match? Do you think Ray's going to drop the mask?
From a merchandise standpoint, I think, you know, the mask sells a lot, like, for the kid market. So they're going to be losing money if they do. From a wrestling standpoint, I think it's time to drop the mask. I think, it's one of those things where everybody, when WCW died, everybody saw him wrestle without the mask on. So it would add something new to the character. I think he'll lose it.
Well, you know, what really gets me is that it's Jericho's only putting up the belt. He's putting up a prop. I think Jericho should put up his hair. That way it's you know, figuratively a coin flip in the backstage area. You know, where it's not predictable.
Why don't they make it a hair versus title rematch at SummerSlam ladder match?
Yes, exactly. And then my prediction will stand. Ray will fall off of the bottom rung and blow out his knee and be gone forever.
Well, see that, but yeah, I can see that.
Now, I'm gonna crack this joke, which I've never cracked on the air before, but, you know, the WWE Mysterio, why? He has sucked since he's put a Y in his name.
That's true.
Think about that one.
Yes, that's why.
Now tell me, why didn't WWE save this Jericho Ray mask match to headline a pay-per-view from Mexico?
You know, that's actually a really good question. I can't think of a reason why. I think they're not thinking this through. They don't plan things out in advance. But I think if they had
their brand extension, like a SmackDown exclusive, then I could definitely see it headlining a pay per view.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. But I'm just thinking they're all working us right now. This whole Rey Mysterio, whether or not he's going to be with the company still. I think this is all just speculation, just to get us excited to maybe think he might drop his mask. Mm-hmm. Just my two cents.
I think it's gonna lead to a heel turn.
He's never been a heel, though.
In Tijuana, he turned heel and there was a riot.
Oh, okay.
But BobBarnett.com. It's on one of the Lucha Loonies DVDs. It's either one. It's one through eight. I don't remember which one. But yeah, Bob has the whole Torneo Cibernético, followed by Rey Mysterio turning heel.
Oh, wow.
I think that Mysterio should turn heel right alongside Punk. You know, it would be really fresh.
Oh, I think they're building towards a Punk Hardy feud, but they're not going about it the right way. You know, they gotta have the. I think they should have like the whole straight edge versus the former drug user. You know what I mean? I'm better than
you. Yeah, but they can't. They won't do it.
Yeah.
First off, because it's on network TV. Okay, it'd be one thing if it were on Raw, you know, which is on USA cable. That's a little different. But it's on broadcast TV, so it probably won't happen. But I think it would work. I mean, obviously, Gabe Sapolsky knew what he was doing with the Raven CM Punk feud. You know,
I just think WWE wants to be away as far from drugs as far as they can be. I think just having a feud over one guy doing drugs and the other guy not doing other drugs, I don't think that's a good idea.
Well, I have a question about that. But that's SmackDown. Like, what do you do with Edge right now? He's not in the title picture, so...
Turn him babyface. Rob Naylor earlier said that he would like to see a double switch. Punk going heel and Edge turning baby. So then you can have Edge and Hardy against Punk and whomever else. Yeah, that's kind of an interesting dynamic.
They've done worse things.
Yeah. Well, you know, SmackDown's looking up. The future's looking up for SmackDown. They're really building it, you know, heavy on the in-ring stuff. You know, they have some really good talents. ECW is just, you know, probably the best show that WWE produces a week. I watch ECW. I enjoy the show. I love the Harts. Finley, Swagger, you know, needs a manager, and then he's gold. Or, you know, a manager with a penis. But, because I don't believe that a diva could be a manager. They're just eye candy.
Hey, Zombie, just to change topic for a second, did you make that announcement yet, or?
Did I what now?
Did you make that announcement you were talking about last night?
No, not yet. Probably next week.
Okay.
I need to discuss things with my wife. So, as far as programming,
I was in the chat room when you were talking about it, and I was like, "Well, here we go. Just got the promo on the board. Here we go."
No promos on the board. The announcement is, you know, it's just a change in showtime because I've got a new job that I'm starting next Friday that requires me to start work at 5:30 in the morning. So being on at 7 to 9 is not going to fly. So I need to sit down and talk with my boss. I mean my wife, and you know, and work things out.
Oh, you're right, the boss. You're right.
you're right the first time.
Yeah. So I'm not quite sure what we're going to do. I was thinking of maybe taking a break, but then. No, because I mean I look forward to doing the show.
Yeah, and it's a popular show and it downloads a lot. So.
Hey, you know what? The trolls on the Figure Four board can talk all the shit they want, but my numbers don't lie.
Exactly.
Don't give them the time of day.
fuck them. But yeah, whatever. That's neither here nor there. So. Now, for the next pay-per-view, the mystery pay-per-view, as Brian and Dave refer to it, which is happens to be up in Sacramento, which I'm not even going to be able to go. But we have Ray and Jericho. Are there any other matches announced?
You got the Scramble match, ECW. You've got the Orton Triple H match. You've got the women's match. And I think you've got the Punk Hardy match.
My show there.
Sounds good.
Yeah. I think they might squeeze in the Mickey Maurice match as well. I think if they are looking for matches, they might just sneak that one in too.
Mm-hmm. Now, I loved the beginning and the end of Extreme Rules. I loved the bread, but the meat in between I just couldn't deal with. The Ray Jericho match was blow away, match of the year candidate, as far as I'm concerned. And as well as the ladder match. The ladder match was just insane, and the Punk angle after was great. Now, I don't understand why that pay-per-view wasn't hyped up as much as it should have been, considering that they knew those two matches would deliver.
Yeah, but you've got 14 pay-per-views a year. You're oversaturating it. So even if you have some great matches, it's like another pay-per-view? Oh, Christ, here we go. And because it's not a big four, people aren't going to buy it.
Exactly. I miss 1988.
Don't we
1989.
All?
You know, January you had the Rumble. Then in the beginning of the second quarter you had WrestleMania. Then SummerSlam. And then Survivor Series. And then, you know, everything was filled in between. I think that four pay-per-views is perfect for a pro wrestling company. It gives you 3 months to build everything up. You blow it off at the pay-per-view, you know, and you go from there. And it would take a lot off of the writing staff. In other words, they wouldn't need a writing staff. They could have a booking committee, a booker, and a few assistants, as opposed to fucking Hollywood writers that are writing, 8 hours a week of TV, I guess.
Do you think the two-hour free pay-per-view on Monday night will dip into the buys for Sunday's pay-per-view? Because
yes.
Basically, it's Monday's is a pay-per-view. No, you can't say it's not, because it virtually is. The writing staff is going to be getting carpal tunnel all the scripts they'll be writing next week, so.
Well, you know what? Honestly, I think that that will be one aspect, one factor that will hurt. Another factor is that the oversaturation, 14 WWE pay-per-views. That's not counting TNA and other things. And the third X factor is UFC. Okay, UFC is hurting everybody in the pay-per-view market because,
and to a very lesser extent, Affliction.
Yeah, I mean, just in general, because they're constantly putting on good shows, and you just see these their stars are built up properly. You know who the headliners are. There's never a question, and they sell the shows on usually just two fights, the main event and the semi. Sometimes you get like a third or fourth fight that's intriguing, but they have those two fights that will draw the house. And also, you know, I mean, money's tight, brother, all around. You know, so people have to be careful on what they order.
Plus the hype specials. The hype specials are amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Because you sit there and you watch the blow-off, or not the blow-off, the last show before a WWE pay-per-view. Then, right after, you sit down and you watch a UFC preview show. You know, I can pretty much guarantee that you're going to want to order the UFC pay-per-view as opposed to the WWE pay-per-view. You know, plus there's pay-per-view dollars there, you know, where people can only order, you know, can only afford, you know, one or two pay-per-views a month. You know, and since UFC pretty much always puts on quality product, they're going to get one of those two buys.
No problem with UFC, and I think WWE is, I think UFC has a lot of throwaway shows that they'll probably admit are maybe, they're good shows, but for the casual fan, they're just not going to do it. I think what UFC does is they you know, you could argue that WWE does this with the Big Four, but, you know, they try to spread everything around to where they try to get you to order all the WWE pay-per-views, where UFC tries to get you to order at least a couple of them. I think that's the problem with WWE.
The bottom line is, honestly, I think that the problem is it's pocketbook, brother. It's money, and you know people have a certain amount of money to spend, and they're going to whatever they get their best value out of, And obviously,
now, is there a pay-per-view after the Bash before SummerSlam, or is it the Bash and the SummerSlam?
I have no idea.
I believe it's Night of Champions.
Yep, Night of Champions.
Oh, crap, that's right, yeah.
Now, Night of Champions should be a 3-hour Raw.
It was last week.
Jeez. Horrible. Man, and I thought I was cynical. Jeez.
I've been a fan since WrestleMania 3, for crying out loud.
I got you
brother. WrestleMania 4, sorry.
I got you beat. My first match was the January Battle Royal 1979 at the Cow Palace.
Nice. My first match I saw live was Snuka and Barbarian. I was ringside. That was awesome.
Wow. Oh, boy. So, now AAA is they're hot. Their TVs have been doing very well. Their product is, the cream is rising above. You can forego some of the shit on the TV. But
who won that control match? Was it Conan or was it the other guy?
Wait, what happened?
The Triple Mania.
The cage match.
Yeah.
It was Roldan's team that won, if I remember correctly, with Santo going over.
Okay.
At the end.
Huh.
So, but that shakes things up. Jack and Teddy are feuding, which is going to be really fun. Extreme Tiger won the Cruiserweight title, so that opens up a lot of different matches for the Cruiserweights, unless he just drops it, which I think is the plan for him, just to drop it to Jack, because they want to build the division around Jack. So, I hope it doesn't go that way. Or at least it goes that way, but later, because I would love to see Teddy cost Jack a couple title matches with Tiger, so that
I love to see Jack and Teddy feud over the Cruiserweight title.
Exactly, but I'm saying eventually, have Teddy fuck with Jack while Jack's trying to win the belt, and then eventually Teddy will try to screw Jack again, and he'll mess up and screw over Tiger, and then then. Teddy and Jack can do their thing, or even Teddy with Tiger to make a contender, because there's automatically built-in heat because he cost them the title.
What's the guy who signed with WWE this week, the Don Carcass, or whatever his name is?
Dying Carcass?
I don't know. I don't know.
I like that one better.
I love you, Peter. Dying Carcass. Oh no. It's Dying Carcass Jr.
Dying Carcass Jr.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's going to be right up to the main roster. Why not have him feud with Ray over the Intercontinental title? That'd be an easy match to start with.
Well, the thing with Dos Carcass Jr. is that he's been saying for the last couple years, I'm going to WWE, and he's always used it, as a bargaining chip. And to be honest, I don't think WWE would want him. WWE can have anybody down there that they wanted.
Mystico.
If they wanted him, they could get him.
Yeah.
They don't.
They don't want him. Because if they wanted him, they would have signed him. They would have thrown him whatever it would take to get him up here. So, it's not WWE, And the thing is, Dos Caras is so fucking bland. He is so bland. I don't care what anybody says. He's bland. Now, Shocker, on the other hand, Shocker would fit right into WWE. He's American. He speaks English. he would fit in?
Maybe 10 years ago. Now he's just a tub of goo.
Well, yeah, okay. Obviously. Yeah, well, you know, you know, age will do that to you. I mean, look at Parka. You know, he's a huge, big bag of bones.
The fattest bag of bones I've ever seen.
As you can tell, I don't have that much experience on the Mexican scene, so.
Come on, you.
Hey, I'm up north, man. Come on, give me some slack.
SlamBamJam.com.
Jesus. We're not like you.
All right, I got to head out, guys. I just want to give a quick shout-out to AngryMarks.com. Tuesday night, ring the bell. I'll have my guest spot there for my movie review. And,
awesome.
You know, Zombie, doing a great job. Don't let the trolls get to you, man.
Awesome. Thanks for calling in, Pete. I really appreciate it, brother.
You guys take care.
All right, that's
yeah.
Take care, brother. That was Peter H., the most hardcore fucking Canadian in the world. I love Pete, man. He's a good dude. But, yeah, you know, I really got the itch for AAA now. You know what I mean? I'm digging to see what's going to happen now with the TVs, since they're going to do it. They're going to tape and then air it 4 days later. So they're
not
going to. Huh?
That's up.
They're not going to stagger it. Okay, I lost Tony. Tony will have, he'll call right back in. Let's I don't know, what should I do? Yeah, we'll play the Angry Marks commercial again.
Pro wrestling got you down? Need something to lift your spirits? Listen to the podcast at AngryMarks.com. If wrestling gets you all hot and bothered, we've got what you need. Visit AngryMarks.com or subscribe for free on iTunes. The AngryMarks.com podcast, where the marks get nothing but satisfaction.
Okay, we have no Tony on the line. So,
fail.
Yep. Well, we have about 18 minutes to go. I'll just wrap it up. Thanks to Mr. Rob fucking Naylor for calling in. Rob, I appreciate you calling in, dude. It was awesome time. Really wackadoodle. Also need to throw props out to Fit Man Tony Galvin for calling in and speaking on the Wacky Lucha Libre, as well as that hardcore Canadian Peter H. for calling in. It's awesome to hear from you guys on a Friday afternoon. We'll wrap it up here. Go check out my sponsors, WrestleWarehouse.com. They have a few new releases. 2008 shoot interview with Tracy Smothers, which is really, really out there. The shoot was filmed right after Tracy had that breakdown and the problems with his girlfriend last year. So really fun stuff. As well as there's a 2-disc Best of SoCal Crazy in SoCal Pro Wrestling. You need to check out that 2-disc set. It's $10. Well worth the $10, I'll tell you. 8 great matches. All 8 matches are good. There's a legitimate match of the year candidate on disc 2, the cage match with SoCal Crazy and Jason Redondo. It's a legitimate match of the year candidate for California. Yeah, that'll do it. Jeff, I think I'll put you over strong enough. Our other sponsor would be SlamBamJam.com. You can get current and past Lucha Libre and Japanese pro wrestling. Some really good best of comps. There's some obscure indie sleaze on there as well. A bunch of wacky stuff. Tell Alfredo that Zombie from Rebel Guard Radio sent you. SlamBamJam.com. Also got to throw props out to the mothership, AngryMarks.com. Thanks to Stevie J and the boys for hosting me and taking me into your family and into your bosom. You can hit me on the MySpace gimmick, myspace.com/Rebel Guard Radio. Or you can email me directly, KIDZOMBIE2000@AOL.com. That should wrap things up. I will talk to you guys later.